attention, listener. This is an announcement. This program, AWCY-FM, and associated programs, such as Eureka Cast Now and Minds on the Masters, heretofore will cease existence. What you're about to hear is a different thing called The Body Project. Episodes of The Body Project will be available somewhere else. You will have to find them yourself, or the way to navigate to them may or may not be available at awcyfm.com at some point in the future. But they will not be added to this feed. This feed will just sort of stop. The episodes will still be there, but no new content will be added. So if you want to continue any of this, then my suggestion is you give up all false hopes and instead consider listening to The Body Project. The first episode of The Body Project will be presented as follows, as an act of mercy.
Taking your lunch at your desk like usual. Couscous with grilled chicken. When a memory comes to you, something you hadn't thought about in a long time, a memory of when you were a child. You and your brother living at the old house had a wide backyard with a big oak tree. And one day when you were only 5 years old, your brother, who was a few years older than you, took you by the hand to the backyard, where there was, in that oak tree, a hornet's nest. And you being young, you didn't recognize what it was. You only saw it as a paper ball hanging from the branches. He looks to you and points up at it, and he says, "You know what's inside there? Honey." And you, being young, and not knowing the difference between the hornets, the wasps, and the bees, believed him. And he says to you, "You should go get some honey from in there. It's the tastiest when it comes directly from the hive." And you nod, and you think about Pooh Bear. And you think, what fun would it be? I bet it's very tasty. And so you begin climbing the tree. Despite your age, you have a strong grip. Despite your age, you're able to make your way up the tree, and you get to that branch where the hornet's nest is hanging. And you reach to it, and the wasps, they come at you. They sting you. You're crying as they sting you, and they cover you, and the wings, and the antenna, and the glint off their multifaceted eyes pierce into you. You fall from the tree and you break your arm. And your brother looking down at you. As your arm is bent, as you're covered in welts, as you're crying. You cry and he laughs. He laughs harder than you've ever seen him laugh before or since. And you reminisce about this, you think about this, and while you may laugh about it at Thanksgiving, while you may laugh about it in front of your coworkers and your friends, deep down there is a resentment. Deep down, there is a remembrance of that moment, of that laughter, and the pain that you felt. And within that moment, Body Project.
So I'm at a party, and we're just, you know, having a conversation. One thing leads to another. Interesting topics lead way to interesting ideas, and so I bring it up. I bring up that this whole thing sounds a lot to me like monkey theory. And he stops and he questions me about it. He has the audacity to ask me, "What do you mean? What is monkey theory?" And what do I say to that? What is monkey theory? I don't know, dude. Am I really gonna explain monkey theory to you right now? Am I gonna explain to you what monkey theory is? Then it wouldn't be monkey theory, frankly. Am I gonna destroy the sanctity, the purity of this beautiful idea that's painted into all of our minds, hearts, and souls? Monkey theory, I'm gonna explain that to you? Van Gogh couldn't do that. You think I'm gonna do that? Well, you're in for quite a surprise. Because the answer is no. And I wanted to leave it at that, but then he comes back at me. Like a gibbon or like an orangutan. He keeps questioning me about monkey theory. At this point, I was out of it, so I started to get mad. Yeah. I did start to get a little peed-o'd. Peed-o? I don't know, dude, it's monkey theory. I don't need to explain to you monkey theory. It's not my job to tell you what monkey theory is. And so my face is red. I'm like screaming at this point. Everybody in the party's looking at me. And so what do? I start screaming louder. I start making sure that everybody in the party knows that this guy doesn't know what monkey theory is. I start yelling, this guy doesn't know what monkey theory is. And for some reason, and let me reiterate, the other guys, this guy, Jason Lizard is his name or something, he's the one that didn't know what monkey theory was, and now I feel like an idiot. As I'm in this party, I'm screaming about monkey theory. And it's only becoming more and more like monkey theory. I'm falling right into monkey theory. I'm falling into the trap. And this guy who doesn't even know what monkey theory is, he's sitting tall. He's got a real smug look on his face, like this was his plan all along. I'm not the idiot here, okay? I'm just a guy who just so happened to see how all this is very easily summed up by the very simple idea of monkey theory. So at that point, I just had to leave, right? I take three rounds, I walk around the house, and then I slip out the back door, and I'm into the open night sky.
party people, New Year's 2007! How we doing tonight? New year, new party? We all having a good time? Yeah, we're having a good time. Yeah, yeah, how we feeling about that, DJ? Alright, 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 DJ! Let's get something pensive going, huh? Yeah, alright, alright, alright. Trying to be mindful in this new year tonight! Mindful! Yeah, alright. Yeah, yeah, DJ, throw some of that Nietzsche on there! Yeah! Yeah. Yeah, we're German neoclassical tonight. All right. Who's feeling fjords? We want fjords? Yeah, let's hit with some fjords. You want some fjords out there, huh? Fjords! Yeah. All right. We're feeling in the club tonight. All right. Let's switch it up, DJ. Let's hit it with something sapphic. Yeah. Hey, who's up in the club enjoying that Andrian Dworkin style beat, huh? Yeah. It's a new year. We're feeling it. New year, new party, baby. All right, let's switch it back. Let's do a rollback. Let's do a throwback. We're in the Renaissance. Let's take it back to the Renaissance. Yeah. Back in the Renaissance, baby. New Year's 2007 at the club. Who's out there? Let's hear from the ladies. Yeah. Hitting them with that Machiavelli. Hitting them with that Da Vinci, hitting them with that Rembrandt, hitting them with that Michelangelo, hitting them with that Raphael. We're Italian in the Renaissance tonight, tomorrow, this year. All right. Yeah. We're on the verandas in the club tonight. We're in the vineyards. Who's in the vineyards? Ladies in the vineyards, let's hear from you. We're partying tonight. We're feeling good tonight. Yo, fellas, who's eating those succulent tomatoes, the San Marzano tomatoes? Let's hear it if you're eating those succulent tomatoes, huh? Let's hear if you're eating those succulent tomatoes. Not tonight, but maybe later tonight. Yeah! Hey, DJ, give me that Sicilian beat. Yeah. Hey, DJ, give me that Calabrian beat. Hey, DJ, give me that Venus beat. Hey, DJ. Give me that Vatican beat! Hey DJ! Give me that confessional beat! Hey DJ! I'm sorry for my sins! Hey DJ! Give me that repentance beat! Yo! Martin Luther coming in on the beat. Protestant style beat, let's hear it, DJ. Yeah, that 40-year war style beat, let's go. We're feeling it in the club, New Year 2007.
Since I was a young boy, I have had a fascination with squishmallows. I purchased my first one in 2017 from Walgreens. His name was Cam the Cat. Two beady eyes and an alluring smile in three sizes. 8, 12, and 16 inches. I went with 16 inches. He was a prize. I was unaware just how much I would be taken by him. And before long, like all good things, you develop an appetite for more. So first was Piper, and then Puff. Penguins, both of them. There was Hans the Hedgehog, Fifi the Fox, Hoot the Owl, Holly the Owl. And while others have since come, these remained my inner circle, where I could go to speak about the thoughts that I couldn't share with anyone else. And Cam alone, would speak back. All this, despite the fact that they weren't rare. They weren't first edition. The other collectors, they weren't interested. They called them mass-produced. And while they hoarded their Jack the Black Cat rare editions, grabbed from comic cons and shareholder meetings, I sufficed with Cam. Because what is missed by collectors, what is missed by the casuals in the hobby, is that they all are individuals. Not just through manufacturing mistakes, not through the differences in their filling or the ways in which their seams are closed, but because there is a soul, there is an essence. They are all different, and they all have their place. And when I meet a woman and bring her to my house, they comment on it. On some subconscious level, they know that she has to prove to them that they are worthy. They are my confidants. They are my protectors. And Cam alone is the one who approves. They like Lenora the Loon. She's an aquatic bird with a white neck and vertical black stripes. She has a gray body and black wings. She's rare to the hobbyists. And I tell them that. I tell the women I bring to my house when they look at her that she is rare, and they are impressed. But Cam the Cat is still my favorite. He was my first. And in the shelf that looks over my bed, he has a prominent place among the rest of them. He's the ringleader. He's the one that offers me the best advice. He's the one that speaks to me. And don't be fooled. Sometimes he says that they need to leave. Sometimes he says they're not good enough for you. Get her out of the house.
make her leave. And I oblige because Cam has been there for me. Because he has always led me right. And I speak to him, and he's the one that speaks back. But recently, I met a woman. Her name was Veronica, and she is someone I've known for a long time. A fellow hobbyist. And I really wanted it to work out. I really wanted this to work. And it did. And so, after months of courting, because she's old-fashioned, but after months of courting and dates and slight innuendos, I bring her back. And I can tell Cam is unhappy, but I have to make my own decisions, and I ignore him. I ignore him as he speaks to me. I do not speak back. Because it is my time, it is Veronica's time. And while Cam has been there for years, my life has been longer since and will go longer after, so I ignore it. And as the night gets better, as things go towards an inevitable conclusion, we come to the bedroom, and the clothes have come off, and we are embraced. And as the act happens, I see him. I look up from the work that I'm doing, and I look up at Cam. And he says something to me that's unrepeatable. He's entering my mind. He's telling me to do things that are unconscionable. And I say, out loud, I say, you can't have her. She's mine. You can't have her. She's good to me. You can't have her.
forgotten, erased, unresponsive, replaced, abandoned.
The magnitude of what we had done when we invented time travel. And as such, we kept it to ourselves, our little team of scientists. We had realized what we did. Some cried, some laughed. Most sat in silence, dumbfounded, mulling over what this all meant. But the real question was what to do next. We had unlocked the powers of the universe itself, and what the next move would be would have ramifications not just for the future, but the present and the past. And ultimately, someone spoke.
So, should we kill baby Hitler?
The answer, it turned out, was yes. And so, with our newfound abilities, our newfound technology, we did. And it was unpleasant. And it was jarring, traumatic to the people that we sent, but they did it. They did the job. But when they returned, things weren't all that different. Still war, still hate, bigotry, poverty, starvation. For all of the bloodshed and the effort, it seemed like there was still more to do.
I think maybe we should kill another baby.
So, we decided we should. Mussolini. Were largely the same when we returned. Franco, again, nothing changed. Stalin, and then Pol Pot. And still, the world was as filled with evil as it ever was. Nothing seemed to be making all that much of a difference. So we moved to some people down the list. We killed Lee Harvey Oswald. But when we returned, things were much worse, so of course we had to kill baby John F. Kennedy. And we just started moving down the list. Countless historical people killed in the crib. The annals of history ran red with infant blood. All for the greater good, of course, or at least that's what we told ourselves. And all the while, a hunger wells within us. With the power over life and death and the time itself, we relish it. We start killing more and more. And eventually there are no pretenses. It's done for its own sake. And as the past is murdered, the present degrades. And bit by bit,
human project is rendered to first a small team of researchers, to a couple of researchers, to one researcher in a desolate world. For there were no more babies to kill. There were no attempts to make things better available. Jesus wept. He would have if we had not killed him in the manger. So the lone researcher, having killed his colleagues, stands alone. And he realizes that the question of what to do next no longer needs to be raised.
We think we can fit it in season three.
Hello.
Hello.
You're listening to The Body Project.
This is The Body Project, yeah. We both work very hard to write the show, to create the content that you're listening to right now. My name is Colby Slim.
I have been told not to give my name on advice from my lawyer due to pending litigation.
But basically, we're just here to tell you that this show would not be possible without the generous contributions of our sponsors.
Our sponsor, as
yes,
it was.
Our single sponsor, which is the all-around gaming platform
Apex Legends.
That's right. We here at the Body Project, we love Apex Legends.
We all play Apex Legends here. We have it in the office.
And to that end, we wanted to take this time to express our gratitude to the Apex Legends for making all of this possible. You know, we don't receive any sort of remuneration from the radio station, from anyone that operates here. We don't get a wage. We are totally and utterly dependent on contributions.
The generosity of Apex Legends. And they've been extremely generous. I mean, and honestly, I would play it. I would be playing it even if they weren't giving us money.
Right. You know, they've been generous to let us have the ability to play this incredible game, to, you know, in the cyber world, grab a pistol and go out and you know, with that pistol, go up the ELOs, you know, go from diamond to grandmaster, gold to silver, you know, every day. In and out.
I was doing pretty. My life was pretty bad for a really long time. I think anybody that's been a regular listener of this program would know that. Until I discovered, and I really got into Apex Legends, and then I feel like I turned my whole life around in the sense that I had something to care about, something that I was worth living for.
Yeah, it was day and night because you know I work with this guy. And, you know, there was a long time where we would come in the studio, we would try and sit down and we would try and make the program. And it was like trying to get a corpse to do you know, a song and dance routine.
I just wasn't feeling it anymore. I thought I'd lost it.
No, and then Apex Legends comes into your life and then, by extension, my life.
Right.
And here we are.
And
we're doing the show.
We started playing it together, and we've never been closer because we're in there. We're together in a group, in a team, and we are picking up guns. We're finding items. We're opening loot crates, and we are fighting, opposing people all over the world.
Right, and you know, specifically, that's my favorite part of Apex Legends is, you know, going and dealing with people throughout the world because it's a worldwide game. Mm-hmm. Just as we aspire to be a worldwide program, there's probably someone that's listening to this who is not in America, you know, some sort of foreigner, some sort of, stranger. But you're not a stranger to us, and you're not a stranger to Apex Legends.
It's something that bonds us.
Right.
It bonds us all. I wake up in the morning, and I'm excited to get out of bed, because as soon as I wake up, as soon as I get out of bed, I make a beamline over to my computer, and my controller, which has been charging all night, my computer, I turn it on, and I start playing Apex Legends, and that is what I do. Until I go to sleep at night, and then I recharge my brain, and I recharge my controller so that I can play some more Apex Legends the next day.
And you've never looked better.
I've never felt better.
You're glowing. You're positively glowing.
I feel great, and I mean, thank you very much for that. I've not looked in a mirror in months. I don't need to. I don't need to look around me. I need to look in the direction of my computer. I need to see. It's frankly horrible. I hate any time when I am not focused on Apex Legends. I wish I didn't have to sleep. I honestly, the loading times, you know, to get in and out of a game, to turn on the game, it's so fast. It's just so fast. They make the same game so good. I wish it was slower because then I could just have a little bit of rest. I could sleep a little bit sort of in the middle of matches, but it's so fast. As soon as one match is over, you're into another match, which is great for you, but bad for me because I'm not sleeping during, I could be using that time to sleep.
Right. I happen to agree. It with something that's so seamless and so just fulfilling and, you know, purposeful. It's like a fine wine, you know, you don't want to just gulp it all down. I was an alcoholic, so you know, I would gulp it down. I spent a lot of money on wine. I spent so much money on wine and at the beginning, you know, you but the point being is you want to savor it. And so what I've done, what I've set up is I actually have a sleeping schedule I've devised where every 3 hours I take a 30-minute nap and then I get up and continue to go about my day, namely playing Apex Legends. And that allows me to not just, contribute to the community in time frames in which, you know, people living in Chicago might be awake, living in America might be awake. But you know, it's like the UN. I wake up and maybe I'm playing against some Europeans. Maybe I'm playing against some Russians. Maybe I'm playing against some Koreans, you know, and to that end, that has really enabled me to have this worldwide mindset that, and this awake mindset, thanks to Apex Legends, who has been instrumental in making this show happen.
I would be dead without Apex Legends. I was an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. I was on hard drugs, and I couldn't stop until I started playing Apex Legends. And then you can't be drunk because that takes away your reaction time.
Or you can't afford it anymore.
I can't. Well, I mean, I don't care about affording it. I don't care about money anymore. All I care about is pulling the trigger faster than my opponent. And if I'm even a split second slower than him, if my reaction time is even a little bit slower, I'm out of the game. And then what do I have to live for? So I had to quit drugs. I had to quit alcohol. I had to get my life in order so that I could play Apex Legends. And that's the only reason I have to live.
Right. I know. I totally feel that because prior to me coming into Apex Legends and by extension this show, because this show would not be possible without Apex Legends. Thank you.
Thank you, Apex Legends.
Thank you so much. But prior to this, you know, I would come home from my job that I hate. I have a Colt 1911. It's a very nice handgun. And I would pick it up and I'd check it to make sure it's empty. Because, you know, I don't want to be silly, but I would take it. I would take my empty Colt 1911 and I would just sort of hold it against my temple, not pointed to my temple, just holding it against my temple. And I would think tomorrow is the day. Tomorrow is the day. And thankfully it was never the day. But tomorrow was the day when I found Apex Legends.
Yeah, thank God you didn't do it, because then you would have never found Apex Legends.
And we would have never been able to do this show. So I have
one more ask to Apex Legends. I mean, we've been so generous so far. But I think the one ask that I have is, please, I've not been able to make... I mean, thank you very much for your money. I don't know... I have not been paying my electric bill. I've not been paying my internet bill. Anything that is not doing Apex Legends at all times is not something I'm doing. So Apex Legends, if you're out there, if you're listening, please make a GoFundMe for me. You have my you have my bank account information. Share that with the world and make sure people are putting money in it so that my electricity bill is paid so that I can keep playing Apex Legends, because if my internet goes off or my electricity goes off and I can no longer play Apex Legends, I will die immediately.
With that, enjoy the rest of the show.
The transitory nature of life has been weighing on me lately. To be unnoticed is the norm. To be forgotten is expected for the little people such as myself. But even those works we ascribe significance to are not immune. The burning of the Library of Alexandria, the sack of Baghdad, Dona Tion Afonso Francois' work thrown in the fire. There is nothing immutable. Even for those that are wadded, placed on a pedestal. It seems so easy for things to be lost, for great works to disappear into nothing. A century from now, what will they speak of from our time? A thousand years, 10,000 years. What will be left of us? What becomes of the McRib? Will it continue past me? You? Our children, their children? It weighs heavy. It makes me worry for all of us that everything that we strive to, everything that we put our time and energy into, will simply disappear. But I've found hope. I think. I saw a picture. It was taken deep in the ocean. The bottom of some trench. A crevice. Deep below where the whales and the dolphins and anything that we would commonly recognize as life can exist. Deep in the realm of the worms, and the vents, and the sponges, and the jellyfish, and those pale creatures that are simply indescribable, but there was something there that I think tells us that it will all be remembered, that something will perpetuate forever from our works. I saw a picture from deep in the ocean, the bottom of some trench or crevice. It was a bag. I saw a plastic bag. Queer evidence of the works of man of our time. A red bag. And on that bag, a face, a smiling face, toothy, joyous. A face that One would hope would be projected forward into the future, the face of someone who would be happy to be remembered and would allow happiness to go through the historical record. I saw Uncle Ben at the bottom of the ocean, among the muck and the sponges and the worms. I saw Uncle Ben. In the dark, cold, crushing depths. And I felt relief to know that Uncle Ben would always be down there, smiling for all of us, forever.